Stressed out? Need sleep? The cold weather bringing out those aches and pains or arthritis? There's never been a better time to try cannabis. Check out the greenhouse of Walled Lake and learn about the natural way to relax and escape all that 2020 stress. The greenhouse is locally owned, and they love helping people who are new to cannabis. They've got a great flower selection of the best Michigan-grown buds and the biggest pre-roll selection around. Don't want to smoke? No problem. There's vape carts, tinctures, concentrates, and everyone's favorite edibles, like gummies, chocolates, peppermint bark, breath sprays, even the original Mackinac Island fudge. So check out the greenhouse of Walled Lake. 21 and over welcome, no med card needed. They also offer senior and veterans discounts and have a great loyalty rewards program. The Greenhouse of Walled Lake. That's greenhousemi.com. Greetings, everybody. Happy Friday. Welcome to the week that was on Deadline Detroit. I'm your host, Craig Folley. Very glad to have you with us today. There's a lot to discuss. And as usual, I have a wonderful panel here to join me to help make sense of the strangeness that we have witnessed over the past week. Nancy Derringer from Deadline Detroit, back with us once again. Thank you.
Qualifying for the senior discount at the greenhouse, no
there
doubt.
You go. Well, hey, apparently they're giving out free pre-rolls to people who can show that they got vaccinated. Something to know. Also, we have Alan Lengel, who, of course, is the editor and co-founder of Deadline Detroit. Welcome back, Alan.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
We have a psychologist, Lynn Walsh, joining us once again. Glad to have her with us. Thank you. And of course, Wayne State lecturer Saeed Khan, senior lecturer in Near East and Mideast Studies. Thank you for being here once again. Always appreciate your input. And, I think we're actually going to get to talk foreign policy again for the first time in several years in a meaningful way, given what we just witnessed this week. And I just want to do this collective. We made it. We made it. Our 4-year experiment in chaos theory is now officially over. Wednesday morning, watching Marine One take the president off to Air Force One and Edwards Air Force Base so we could get off to Mar-a-Lago. And I was literally screaming, get the blank out at my television the whole time I was witnessing this. I got up early to make sure that I saw that moment because I knew that it was going to be an important one. But Lynn, I'm going to start with you for just a second because, I mean, that sense of relief that I felt on Wednesday morning was something that I didn't expect. I really didn't expect to be moved as emotionally as I was and to feel that sense of relief. It was really odd.
Yeah. So, you know, you said, you know, like we all had that feeling, I think, of gratitude and relief, you know, to see him float off, you know, into the ether, going out to, you know, Frank Sinatra's My Way, which at least provided, you know, a pretty good laugh. You know, it was so ridiculous. But so in talking about like the, or in thinking about the collective PTSD, you know, which, you know, we really are suffering from. So, you know, I think in a lot of ways when we've talked about that or when people talk about it with their friends or whoever, you know, we kind of talk about it in a joking way, but it's actually, you know, most people really are experiencing PTSD. So, you know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, as far, you know, Nancy and I pretty recently were talking about how we had become, you know, you see the American flag, or at least over the past few years, you see a picture of the American flag. I'll be honest. I'd have a negative reaction to it because the flag became, you know, so, enmeshed with the idea of Patriots, which was a code word for, you know, Trump supporters. So, you know, those sort of things, like that's what PTSD is. It's like something that really does trigger a pretty strong emotional reaction. And, you know, this is complex. It's not over. I mean, you know, this is something that, you know, I don't know that we'll ever really recover from. You know, a lot of people have had, you know, so many personal experiences with what this presidency has, you know, brought. Like many people are not talking to family members or have, you know, said goodbye to really old friendships, you know, and that in itself is really traumatizing. You know, it's caused us to kind of look at the people around us that we thought we knew in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's like your world comes out from under you. And my guess is that people, you know, Republicans, you know, feel the same way about Democratic counterparts. You know, I mean, it's not like Democrats or liberals are alone in this collective PTSD, because the Republicans now are suffering from their own form of it, because they think, you know, now everybody's going to start eating babies and, you know, communism.
Well, we'll talk about QAnon in just a little bit, because, I mean, those people are adrift right now, and sure. That could turn into something interesting. But I want to get back to something that happened on the morning of President Trump leaving office on Wednesday. Saeed Khan here was on Twitter that morning and was making some very fine commentary at the strange musical choices that the Trump team kept picking for this quote unquote rally he was going to have at Joint Base Edwards the other day. And I mean, it was just one thing after another that was completely not fitting for the moment. I mean, obviously, YMCA is one of those things. I don't think he's ever really gotten what that song was all about. But songs like Fortunate Son were being played.
Gloria.
Don't understand that he was the object of, you know, Donald Trump was the very person that song was bitching about, the type of person that he was. And it just, the disconnect there, Saeed, was hilarious.
Well, I think that the DJ might have actually been at Greenhouse in Walled Lake right before that. I'd like to hope so, because I wouldn't want him to be tone deaf for other reasons. My favorite, though, was House of the Rising Sun, the rendition by the Animals, because the last time I checked, that song was about a brothel in New Orleans and a man who was down on his luck. And somewhere, Stormy Daniels must just be saying karma is you know what.
I would say the biggest relief that I feel is the stupid talk. It's like debating over the stupid talk, over, you know, things that, I mean, it's okay to debate over regular issues, but talk about like the QAnon talk and the election fraud and just all the delusional conversations, I sort of feel like they're going to sort of fade away, or at least a lot of them will, or at least there won't be a platform for them.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Nancy.
I was just going to say, I think I had a great night's sleep Wednesday night and a terrible one last night. But so, you know, all of our problems are not over. But I do think that the deplatforming of Donald Trump on mainstream social media, I'm talking about like Facebook and Twitter, is going to have a long-term beneficial effect on our public discourse. It's preposterous for these, you know, these conservatives are all censorship, you know, and this is not censorship. A former president of the United States is still one of the most powerful people in the world. He will always have somebody who is willing to carry his, you know, his bullshit basically to the world. But I think that just not having him tweeting and people reacting to the tweets every, you know, five times an hour is going to have a calming and soothing effect on how we speak to each other. I just have to believe that. Maybe that's a silly belief, but I have to believe it's having an effect.
Here's one thing that is happening as a result of this, and I'm actually glad for it, is we're having a real conversation about the First Amendment, freedom of speech, what exactly that means, what it entails, and people not understanding the difference between the government telling you you can't say something and Twitter deciding that you're a danger because you're peddling, you know, conspiracy theories or advocating somebody's assassination or kidnap. I mean, you know, right. This is what's been going on for a long time. And there are consequences to speech, everybody. I could say something on this show right now, and if it gets out there and I say something really, really stupid, which can happen, I could be potentially punished. I could lose my job. I could be banned from Twitter. I could be banned from polite society because I'm an asshole. That's something that can happen as a result of your speech. The one thing that won't happen is the government putting me in jail as a result of it, or telling me that I have to shut up. They cannot do that, but other people can shun me. And this is something that people need to understand. You can be shunned for being an idiot. It happens a lot, and it's happening right now to a number of people. They're screaming that somehow they're being silenced, when in reality, people are just saying, you know what? No, you're just an ass.
My pillow guy. Oh, my God. Cancel culture. That he's being canceled.
Right.
Well, you see this also happening with other corporations, right? In the private sector, airlines now have their own no-fly list, which has nothing to do with TSA. And so there's all these videos going around of these people getting chucked off flights for not wearing their masks or being belligerent. And Yeah, I got to tell you, it's really a surreal feeling to watch the videos and realize it's not me this time. The whole and seriously, I mean, as Lynn was talking about, somewhat flippant here, but to hear the word terrorist used, and it's not just one group of people in this country, is a moment that I didn't really expect to see. And I don't think I filed my copyright infringement case fast enough to say that it really only belongs to Muslims. But I think we're really going through a moment here of understanding, and hopefully all of that Schoolhouse Rock that people didn't watch about understanding government, understanding the private sector, understanding rights and responsibilities, if we take the moment to go ahead and educate.
Well,
that's a really good,
do we want to learn is the question.
That's a really good point. I mean, this was something that came up. I was on another show like this last night. I won't mention it. But that was something that we talked a lot about, and that was and you know, the main host of the show was saying, is it possible for us to ever get to a point where in our self-governance where it's not heads I win, tails you lose constantly, you know, because the first executive orders of the Trump administration were essentially, you know, negating policy accomplishments of the Obama administration. The first executive orders of the Biden administration are doing the same thing to the Trump administration. It's like, what happened to compromise? What happened to you know, give a little, get a little. Well, that's what compromise is, you know. So it's that's what I would like to see come back again, is this some form of sanity. And that's why I still think all of this crap goes back to Newt Gingrich, who kind of introduced that whole atmosphere that Democrats are uniformly evil. We shouldn't have to do this. I mean, read letters to the editor to newspapers, and it's like, I didn't elect this guy so that he would buckle under to Democrats. It's like, no, that's what politics is, you moron. Right. So if we can capitalize on this engagement that people feel with their government and maybe work toward that, I'm all for it.
I think one of the great lessons here of the whole of the past 4 years is that that all the things we took for granted, the progress we've made, and you know, with race, with marriage, with all these various things, are so fragile, that our Constitution is so fragile, that you know, our checks and balances of government, the three branches of government, are really here's a guy who really, I think, reduced it to 1.5 branches of government. I mean, the checks and balances were just, he fired all these inspectors general. Nancy, did you catch that? and it's just, I think we've got to realize that democracy is a lot more fragile. I think we looked at a lot of countries and dictators. I mean, the lies that consistently, I mean, just the fact that, you know, Fauci said yesterday that he found it so liberating that basically he could tell the truth, that, you know, that he didn't have to worry about telling the truth. I mean, we lived in a very, very scary era there. And it came very close to, I mean, when we looked at other countries and thought, oh, my God, that is so scary that they have these dictators. We came pretty close on that. And well, there's some good lessons to be learned from it all.
Didn't it look like Fauci had an eye job or LASIK? I mean, he just looked different.
He's smiling. You know? I mean, he looked happy. And you know, look, that light at the end of the tunnel thing is real here, because, you know, you get a sense that there's an administration in place now that actually wants to do something serious about dealing with COVID. And finding a way to get these vaccines out there and rolled out in a comprehensive fashion that actually makes sense, instead of just sitting, throwing up your hands and saying, it's up to you, states. And that's basically what we have learned in the last few days was the plan, was that there was no plan and there was no attempt to really come up with one, despite the frustrations of the people that were working in this administration. They were trying to come up with plans and were rebuffed. People were telling them, take that away. He doesn't want to hear about it. And now we're probably going to hit 500,000 deaths before the end of February, which is a remarkable number. And something that How good was this? We actually had a moment of silence the other day for the victims of COVID for the first time.
For the first time. It was amazing. I was astonished.
It's one of those things that you take for granted. You're going to see, but you didn't. And it actually meant something. And you felt that the people there actually care and want to do something about it instead of just wishing it would go away. Just that level of competence is something that maybe we used to take for granted. I certainly won't anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just that to me was one of the most moving parts of the day, was the fact that Joe Biden actually had a moment of silence for the COVID victims.
Right.
Well, when you saw his going away speech, his final words, I mean, he just totally ignored the pandemic. The only mention of the pandemic was, oh my God, it ruined my numbers. It ruined, the employment numbers. It would have been much better without the pandemic. Not acknowledging that we're still in the midst of crazy, crazy times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed.
So what? My favorite part of it. I only caught the tail end, but have a nice life.
Yeah, and have a nice life, and I'll be back at some point.
Which, by the way, was the same thing that Sam Malone told Shelley Long as she was leaving in Cheers. So I think we've come full circle.
That's what my old boyfriend used to say that to his old girlfriends. Probably said it to me at some point, but I don't remember. Actually, my favorite part of the departure, which I did not watch live, I had to see snippets of it later, was number one, that the Trump children were all in tears, which was just like, ooh, I wanted to be one of those, those insects that lands on tears and just drinks.
You mean the one that landed on Mike Pence's head in the debate?
Yeah, the fly. And then because I hate to feel that kind of schadenfreude, but it was really appropriate in this case. And the other was Melania's FU moo-moo that she got off of.
She did look like a lady of leisure at that point when she changed her clothes.
Air Force One in Florida. It was kind of like, I mean, she looked good. She had kind of this sort of, businesswoman, rich lady suit on when she got on. And then she gets off in that ridiculous, moo-moo, which apparently costs $3,700. Well, it's by Chanel.
The purse she was carrying was something like $20,000 or something.
Oh, the
like
Birkin.
That.
Yeah, I know. But it's kind of like, I mean, my God, my grandma used to wear those things.
Well, they are in Miami, or Palm Beach, right? So there you go.
The feeling I get every time I hear her talk is like, who cares? It's like, we don't want to hear your husband and we really don't want to hear you. I mean, she comes out as if she's a voice of some form of authority or something. And it's just hard to take seriously. I still remember the first time that she spoke at the convention and, he had all these cowboys in the audience and stuff and, America. And she's like, Donald Trump is very great man. And everyone was like, oh my God, there's a Russian in the White House. I just thought it was so funny for a guy who was so anti-immigrant. He was just, not away with all that. It's just
not hot Eastern European models. That's always been his.
People that would work on his, his hotels. Yeah. He could not pay.
The dusky skinned domestic workers of the his various properties.
Speaking of this semi-retirement that the Trumps find themselves in at this point in time, here's a question: do you think Trump could actually win an election to be like the condo association president down there at this point?
Del Boca Vista.
Del Boca Vista. That's exactly right.
Take it,
after five, Trump. I mean, I'm not sure that would work, but you take a look though at what's going on. He's still facing a vote probably next week in the Senate on whether or not to convict him in his impeachment. He was, of course, impeached again. And that's going to happen, I think, Monday. They're going to be delivered over there. And it looks like they may start the trial by Wednesday or Thursday. That's what I saw this morning. And a lot of people are saying that this isn't something that can happen. But I don't know. I mean, how much does it matter to everybody that they actually follow through on this?
May I?
Here? Yeah, please.
So one of the things that's being talked about, at least in psychology circles, is how much this is actually like a bad breakup. This is like, we're all breaking up with a terrible narcissistic partner that we've been with for 4.5 years or something of that
abusive relationship.
We're finally kind of, you know, seeing a way out. And it's incredibly important for people who are suffering from that kind of either acute stress or PTSD to have some, closure and for there to be consequences for the perpetrator's behavior. So if there has to be, at least for the genuine collective healing, of all of us, of many of us, you know, there has to be a consequence. So if he does not, if there is not a form of consequence as a result of this, whether it's being convicted by the Senate or something, we really can't genuinely move on, I guess, in a healthy way. You know, I think we're always going to probably feel, more disillusioned, have lost any idealism that we may have had towards the end of the Obama presidency. But if there is not a genuine consequence for Trump and for some of the Ted Cruz, for some of the people who really rocked our world in terms of, we're watching this stuff thinking, how can this happen? Who's going to come in? How many times over the past 4 years have all of us seen all the things that have happened and thought, okay, this is going to be the thing that some grown-up's going to come in right now and say, okay, this is enough. And it didn't happen. And it didn't really even happen after the storm on the Capitol, really. I mean, to some degree it did, but not really. So at any rate, if we're comparing this to like a type of PTSD, it is really important that there is some kind of real consequence for Trump inciting white supremacists in white supremacy and making that, normalizing that. Okay. So if that doesn't happen, then, I think we're in a lot more trouble going forward.
I think it's great that the comments from some of the people who stormed the Capitol are, well, Trump invited us and we did this for Trump. And I think that's great evidence to present during the trial. They say, well, Trump didn't have anything to do with it. It's clear that the message got through.
I think politically, if I were Cruz or Hawley or Rubio or anybody who's looking to run in 24, I would want him to be convicted and I'd want him to be disqualified from running for public office because it opens things up for them. Otherwise, if it's always dangling over, and he will dangle it over everybody that he may run again in 24, that's going to really affect their fundraising. It's going to affect the way that they message. It's going to affect the way that they legislate. And they may not necessarily have a chance because the stigma of being Trump sycophants is still there. But it's going to be a really interesting way to see how the Republicans decide. McConnell has practically already handed them the ballot saying vote for conviction to everybody. He really seems to want this because he wants to reclaim the leadership of the Republican Party.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure there'll be people there to sort of remind him that he did everything in his power to let this go as long as possible before he actually turned on the president. Only when it was completely obvious that there were no more options did he actually do that. And in the meantime, we've got possible ethics complaints being brought up against Hawley and Cruz and the other people that enabled this type of behavior. And a lot of people are saying that this is a dangerous precedent, that we can't go after our political enemies in this regard. But this is different. I mean, these are people that basically perpetuated, quote unquote, the big lie. And it was a big lie about the results of the election. They sowed doubt in our democracy and our system of government, and whether they meant to or not, encouraged, again, the seditionists and the insurrectionists that stormed the Capitol by suggesting that there was still something that could be done to delay the inevitable or to deny the inevitable from happening, which was completely wrong and fabricated. So, I mean, there is that potential stain that's there. Is there any danger of overreach, though, on the part of the Democrats if they push this too far against people like Cruz and Hawley in particular, who I think need to have some sort of reckoning for their reckless behavior?
There probably is some danger, but at some point I agree with Lynn. We have to just say, look, here's the vampire, here's the stake, and we just got to drive it through its heart. I mean, keep in mind, for all the noise they make, for all the BS about how big the rallies are and everything, we're talking about roughly 30% of the electorate right now, right? I mean, Trump never cracked 45% of his approval rating I mean, this is a very loud, substantial, but not overwhelming minority of people. And again, I think that with, you know, stripped of his Twitter, you're going to have to work a lot harder to see what he's, you know, spewing out to the world on any given day. I really think that we need to follow through on some of this stuff, because you're right. It cannot be said often enough that this whole interregnum between the election and the inauguration was based on a lie. Okay. There was no widespread fraud. All the votes were counted. We just got more, you know, and I'm still seeing it, but I see it in a fringier and fringier people. You know, whoa, he got more votes than any sitting president in history. It's like, well, yeah. And the other guy got, you know, 8 million or 7 million more. So that's, you know, game over.
And whatever motivated people to vote, you know, whether it was dislike of President Trump or people just like Joe Biden. I mean, people voted.
They wanted this to end.
I think the impeachment should go through. I think there should be a hearing. I think as far as Ted Cruz and some of those other guys, I think a censure may be good enough at this point. I mean, I don't know. There is the part where they'll say, well, we were just raising concerns, and I know it's bullshit. No, I know it's bullshit, but at some point, we have to be careful about freedom of speech and all that kind of stuff. So I think if we started impeaching them, I think it would, or try to remove them, I think it would be dangerous. But I think they should be censored. That's my.
Well, I think it's also going to be interesting to see moving forward if 2020 signaled the end of populism. I don't know if any of the if the country really has the stomach for either left-wing populism of Uncle Bernie, or I mean, once we get past all the memes, and or who's going to inherit the mantle of right-wing populism. We may go right back to that old boring fuddy-duddy, well, we're actually going to get stuff done, where reality matters more than rhetoric.
Well,
I think with Mitch McConnell, it's not only that he sees no more use and wants to take over once again as the head person, but I think he was really pissed at what Trump did before the Georgia election, which ended up costing him his power right there. And I think he's really so angry at Trump that he destroyed the majority that, you know, by asking for the $2,000, by denigrating the Republicans in Georgia. I mean, Trump did everything to help the Democrats. And I think McConnell's just so pissed at him about that.
Let's talk a little bit about you. I just heard, I think it was Nancy referring to the fringiest of the fringe. Really interesting to see what's happening to the QAnon people in the last couple of weeks. I think there's like this mix of them out there. Some are saying, well, you know, maybe we were taken here. Maybe we got duped. And maybe this was wrong all along. And so this goes back to that, you know, what we were hearing from Lynn earlier, that this isn't just Democrats who have this PTSD. A lot of these people that went down this rabbit hole are going to be confused and deluded for a little bit longer. Some of them recognizing that maybe this whole thing was made up. Others now suggesting that maybe it was, you know, maybe Joe Biden was Q all along. We've actually seen some people suggesting that that's the case. But I'm a little bit worried about where some of these people are going to be coming out of here after they sort of realize that they were taken. The fact that so many people could be manipulated that way is really shocking to me, first of all, that so many people bought into that. But where do they go now? Because they can't now, they hate the liberals already, right? Because we're, they, you know, trying to destroy the world. But now the people that they believed in have taken them to the cleaners. What happens to this group of people?
That's the thing that I find so appalling about the Bannon pardon. Steve Bannon was a rich man when he got into this game. He is still a rich man. And I think I had a little Twitter string on this the day the pardons came down, about going to that We Build the Wall town hall. And these were not, I mean, I didn't see a lot of Q material there, but I have no doubt believing that there was a substantial Q-believing faction in that crowd that day. And these were not the people who flew on their private planes to Washington. I mean, these are the people who put up GoFundMes and tried to get a $75 bus ticket. I mean, which is not to say they're pitiable or not responsible for their own delusions. But, you know, these were, Violet and I talked to some guy who said, you know, I live on Social Security, but I think I can afford $5 for the We Build the Wall town hall. Okay. We Build the Wall. Well, what happened? I mean, that's Steve Bannon and Chris, not Chris Kobach, the other guy, the guy with the triple amputee. They were indicted for essentially stealing that money, you know, and using it to, and Steve Bannon was arrested on a yacht, which I think is just the perfect thing. You know, he stole from them. He stole their money.
Right.
And, you know, there has to be some blowback from that. Either that or these people, you know, they are contemptible because they won't even push back when that happens. So well, I don't you know. I mean, we'll find out what happens to Q. Q at least gives these folks something to live for. And
QAnon, it seems like the QAnon is just a fancier dressed up KKK, really. I see. It's just, you know, more attractive people sort of being the face of that, of them being more out. But I mean, you know, it's anti-Semitic, it's racist, it's delusional. It's just downright scary. And it's
QAnon. I mean, they. Oh, go ahead, Nancy.
I just want to say very briefly, Alan and I lived through the satanic panic of the 80s and 90s. I think that was, you know, when it was. You know, they were kidnapping children and, you know, using them in satanic rituals. And, you know, that's a big part of QAnon. But that eventually just kind of petered off. I really think of Trump these days as Puff the Magic Dragon.
Well, a lot of the QAnon stuff
stopped showing up.
A lot of the QAnon stuff is rooted in some really, really ancient anti-Semitic stuff. I mean, that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. So if people really want to dig into the QAnon stuff, I mean, people just took out some old things and repackaged it as something new and sold it to a new bunch of suckers. Right. And that's exactly what happened. Well, we'll get to pardons in a little bit because I definitely want to talk about Kwame Kilpatrick in a bit. But I do want to mention something that happened right before President Trump left office. And that is Mike Pompeo was supposed to go to Europe and to go to visit the EU in Brussels and also visit Luxembourg. And my new hero, of course, is the foreign minister from Luxembourg, who went on the radio and basically told the truth about Donald Trump and said bad things. And Pompeo canceled the trip. And so Luxembourg, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't that the guy that got pushed out of the way by Donald Trump at the EU meeting a couple of years ago?
I think it was. It was either that or Liechtenstein or whatever. Oh, other little principalities over there in Europe.
But, okay, I'm gonna have to go Mel Brooks on you there, Nancy. It's Liechtenstein.
But I mean, you know, it's funny because you then hear the guy saying, well, if he didn't come because of what I said in that interview, well, great, because we didn't really want him here anyway. And nobody in the EU wants this guy here anyway. And we're excited to actually see if we can't rebuild our relationship with the United States. And Saeed, you know, as somebody who travels the world and somebody who deals with foreign policy, I mean, the damage that has been done here has got to be more significant than I think we realize.
There's a feeling that people are definitely relieved that at least the circus of Trump is over. But I think that people are wary because now they realize that it could happen again. And I think that once that contagion has been put out there, that they're waiting with bated breath that within another 4 years, if somebody comes in, treaties, accords, which people not only expend time and energy and resources, but also reputation, that if in the stroke of a pen, someone can pull us out of, let's just say as an example, TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Iran nuclear deal. I mean, we can debate the merits of those, but the idea of America not only being a part of that, but in many cases actually instigating, lobbying for people to belong. This would be like the United States in August of 1990, putting together the coalition of the willing to go after Saddam Hussein. And then at the very last minute, pulling out and saying, yeah, you know what, we're good on this. The Super Bowl is coming up. You guys take care of it. That's what I'm seeing from around the world. At the same time, you do see some drifters who had cozied up to Trump are now trying to come back. MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, is making gestures. The fact that Saudi Arabia and the UAE have normalized relations with Qatar after 3.5 years of a freeze out. These are all signals to Biden to say, you know, we're good, aren't we? Because they want to stay in America's grace and favor.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch over the next few months how and what priority he puts on these visits from foreign leaders and visits to foreign countries. He's got some work to do. I think a trip to the EU is definitely warranted for President Biden pretty soon to get Germany back in the fold and France, of course. But you mentioned that populism is one of those things that may take a hit as a result of this. But we've seen a resurgence of that in Europe as well. And like I said, so do the European leaders look at this saying, OK, here's an opportunity for us to actually tamp this down in our own countries because it's a problem over there.
It's a possibility. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Biden's posture is to people like Viktor Orban in Hungary, Sebastian Kurz in Austria, and also recognizing without putting too much pressure or a thumb on the scale of what's going to happen next year in France. I mean, here you got Emmanuel Macron, who's on the ropes with a very strong and resurgent far right wing party with Marine Le Pen. Macron's approach right now has been to try to lurch to the right, but he can never outright her. So it's going to disillusion quite a few people over there. And hopefully if Biden's in the picture and there can be more of an assurance to France that America will give it respect, it might be a good deterrent for people to consider Marine Le Pen.
Well, it's going to be, like I said, fascinating to watch how this all unfolds and how long it takes to undo some of the damage that's been done. But let's focus. That's Trump. Let's focus forward here. Joe Biden takes office on Wednesday, takes the oath of office, immediately gets to work. We saw a number of executive orders that were signed on that first day, which basically wiped out a whole bunch of what President Trump did by executive order. Stops building the wall first. Reverses the immigration policy, stops the Muslim ban, stops work on the Keystone XL pipeline, a number of other things, rejoins the Paris Accords. By the way, Ted Cruz may get the dumbest tweet of the week award over that question, which we'll get to in just a little bit. But, it was like he got into office and he couldn't wait. He's like, I am not going to wait to get this stuff done. I'm going to make a statement on my first day in office. How does everybody feel about Joe Biden and those steps he has taken thus far? He's been in office a couple of days. I, for one, the most fascinating thing for me was seeing press briefings again, daily press briefings. What a wonderful thing. And that's going to be great to see that going forward. But how's everybody feeling about those first actions?
Hey, there were so many things that Trump did. There was so much damage that he did. There was so much bad policy that, I think a lot of the moves were good moves. And like I say, just seeing the COVID thing where people are high anxiety. A lot of people want to get the vaccines. They're scrambling to try to get it. They're anxious to get it. The rollout has been not very good initially. And just the fact we have variants coming in, we have a lot of things going on. There's still a lot of drama. We still have the economy. We're still trying to figure out how to, rev up the economy and get it back on track. There's so much going on that the people want to hear. And I think we went through so many ridiculous Trump press conferences about the COVID, even about, when he talked about the bleach and nobody stood up to him and said, no, you're an idiot. What are you talking about? They were just like, yeah, okay.
There's a lot, though, to that Fauci, the Fauci gesture that he did, where he kind of rubbed his back. It wasn't exactly American Sign Language, but the message definitely got through there.
Right.
So, look, you got the travel ban, you got DACA, you've got the Paris Climate Accord, you've got WHO. And by the way, for those keeping score, Alan, second Mel Brooks reference right there, high anxiety. Good job. but But it's wonderful because it's a corrective. But I think the point that Nancy made before is really important. We have turned the executive branch from one presidency to the other into a ping pong match. It's like point, counterpoint, erase, affirm, repudiate, rinse and dry again. It's wonderful when it's on your side to see this as a milestone and an advancement, but we have to ask ourselves structurally, is this really where we want to be?
Right. Well, and that to me is on Mitch McConnell, because, you know, that wasn't that his basic goal, was to make Obama a one-term president, blocked everything. They just weren't going to let him get any, after the Affordable Care Act, they weren't going to let him get any kind of accomplishments. And, you know, this is what we end up with. So well,
it seems like the executive order is just, the idea of working with Congress is just like not even an issue anymore. It's just like, we're going to sign an executive order. We'll do this. We'll do that. We've seen so little like really, really meaningful legislation pushed through. But we see a lot of stuff happening. And Trump was very critical of Obama doing executive orders. And then he came in and really was the king of executive orders.
Right. But here's part of the reason why, though, is because some of the stuff that he was pushing, there's no way that Congress would have passed, for instance, like the Muslim ban. That's not something that Congress would have considered, because they would have realized that it blatantly what? Unconstitutional and really, really wrong-headed and mean-spirited, they wouldn't have passed this. I don't think they would have passed it even with control of both houses.
Can we also say right out front that Trump was never, this is the way Trump likes to, I mean, this is how he likes to do business. You know, he likes to wave his hands and say, make it so. I mean, this is what drives me crazy every time I see somebody running for public office, whether it's city council or the presidency of the United States, saying, vote for me. I'm a businessman and I know how to meet a payroll. It's like, well, do you know how to negotiate? Do you know how, I mean, he pitched himself as this great deal maker. And did he ever make a deal in 4 years? No, it was all sign with the Sharpie and hold it up. And, you know, it was how many memes.
But like you're saying, Nancy, I think that's exactly his MO. With an executive order, he could take credit for it.
Right.
It was not something that the legislature did. More importantly, if you listen to his swan song with Gloria and My Way and YMCA blaring, nothing that he mentioned as an achievement was something that he had legislation going through. It was all about an executive order or some action that was really solely within the province of the executive branch, like his foreign policy in the Middle East.
Right. Exactly.
Well, and I have a feeling that. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I personally enjoyed seeing, you know, one of the first visuals we had of President Biden, you know, after taking the oath, was seeing him at the desk with a ginormous stack of, the executive orders, which visually just warmed my heart. But, you know, I kind of took it as, he had to give something to, you know, to all the people, to the Democrats, you know, something that was going to say, okay, here you go, guys. You know, this is a little bit of a panacea. Not to say that he doesn't really support those things, but, you know, that, you know, for all intents and purposes was a, here you go to the Democrats, you know, but, you know, my impression of Trump and all the executive orders and whatnot was, I don't know that he ever really cared at all about any of that stuff. It was all pandering. It was to have this show of, you know, I mean, the Muslim ban, like if he, you know, these things that would never happen, you know, that he knew was never going to happen. So, you know, I don't think he had, you know, he cared about any of it. It was just a show of power and flexing and pandering to his base. And in a sense, you know, in a way, I think this was, you know, Biden kind of just showing, okay, there's a new regime in town. None of those things, I think, were hugely, I would say are really upsetting to most Republicans. They're not going to be tearing their hair out. Although Tucker Carlson was extremely upset about the pipeline thing. So,
well, Tucker Carlson,
one of the things, Lynn, is that if you ever spoke to people who were dug in with Trump, one of the major plus points for them was he kept his promises. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the connection. When it came to the travel ban, first thing down the escalator, he kept it. It was like a checklist. By the way, I have to say, along with the stack of executive orders, it was really moving to see the bust of Cesar Chavez behind him. And I was just waiting for somebody on Fox News to say, why does he have Hugo Chavez back there?
Tucker Carlson did. Yeah, yeah. He ranted in his editorial, I think, last night, I want to say it was.
I have some feeling we're going to see some strangeness coming out of Fox News for the next few years.
They're having an identity crisis.
Certainly are. And they've got competition on their right flank, which is something that they don't normally have from OAN. And from Breitbart and Newsmax and some of these other people. So, all right. So let's talk a little bit about this, because I mean, we're running out of time. Kwame Kilpatrick had his sentence commuted. He was not pardoned, and everybody's like, oh, Kwame got pardoned. No, he did not. The conviction still stands. He still has to pay the restitution. But now he at least has an opportunity, I guess, to get a job somewhere and maybe start paying that off. I'm not worried about the commutation of the sentence. Had he been pardoned, I might feel a little bit differently. But you know what? The guy's been in jail for a long time. I know a lot of people are upset, but 28 years was a long sentence. We've had this conversation on this program before. Was anybody really concerned about it? I mean, I don't have a problem with the guy going out there trying to support his family. I suppose that's where I am right now.
Yeah, I generally feel okay with it. I mean, he deserves to serve some time. I think he was proven in court that there were corrupt acts, including taking bribes, rigging bids for his buddy, and there was unexplained money in his bank account. And the jury was a mixed jury, black, white. It was evenly mixed, so there wasn't any charges of oh my God, it was a white lynching mob or whatever. But I think 28 years was ridiculous. We saw with Congressman Cunningham, I think he got 7 or 8 years, and we've seen a creeping up over time. Then we saw Congressman Jefferson out of Louisiana, who was sentenced in an Alexandria, Virginia court to 13 years, which was really extraordinarily high at the time. Then we saw Rob Blagojevich out of Illinois, who got 14 years. So, and that was sort of the cap. Then what they did, they sentenced him based on a bad precedent out in Cleveland. There was a county commissioner there who got 28 years, which is generally ridiculous for corruption. Kwame got 28 years. What's the point? I mean, is 10 years not enough to send a message? He's taken away from his kids. He couldn't see his kids grow up. His marriage fell apart, although it was probably falling apart anyways.
That was on him before the jail. Right.
It had nothing to do with that. It didn't help. I mean, the prison thing was an added stress to the relationship. But all in all, I mean, look, the judge set herself up. Not every judge in that courthouse agreed with that sentence. The judge set herself up for the sentence to be commuted at minimum at some point. Because 10, 15 years was going to be more than enough.
I feel like he's not in a position right now with a commutation where he's going to be able to do any damage in any capacity. And I am a little bit troubled, though, that one of the reasons that Kwame Kilpatrick, his sentence situation, and possible pardon was even up for discussion is because Trump thought it might get him votes in Detroit. That's something that bothers me. That should not be the reason that you ever think about whether or not you're going to pardon somebody.
I actually read that it was that Diamond and Silk were lying. Really, this
are they even from here?
That was for Lil Wayne.
But they were mentioned. They were mentioned in the statement for Kwame Kilpatrick as well that Diamond and Silk had lobbied for his release.
That was actually one where that statement had a missing comma that would have made it clear that Diamond and Silk were not Detroiters. But okay, did you ever think you?
I don't think they went to Oxford either. So
no, I don't think so either. Did you ever think that you would see the words Diamond and Silk in a? In a presidential pardon statement,
Probably not.
Anyway, what are they going to do now, man? It's like all the grifters have to like find a new grift. But
it's one of those. You ever seen one of those channels that will try to do like a daily show type thing? They always try to do these sort of comedy shows, mm-hmm. but from a right-wing perspective. And
yeah, they're never funny.
Wholly unfunny. And it's not that they're... It's not, I don't know. It's
you just mean like Greg Gutfeld.
Oh yeah. Greg Gutfeld. Absolutely.
Anyway, back to Kwame. I have been listening to that speech that Lengel just made. Cause I sat next to him back when we had an office.
That's right.
We all worked in an office. I've heard that speech from him multiple times and I have given up. I'm like, okay, I'm fully with you on this one. And it was, if Blagojevich got 7 years, Kwame ended up serving 7 years. I think that's justice. You know, let him start over.
Yeah. And that's exactly what's likely to happen here. And we'll see where he ends up. That's going to be the question because,
yeah.
Texas under T.D. Jakes' wing in some capacity, I have a feeling might happen. So,
yeah. The question is he better off being down in Georgia and starting totally anew, or does he come back here and, you know,
stir the shit.
Yeah. Hey, you know, everybody deserves a second chance, right? So we shall see. But I thought that was some interesting news that came out of there this week. All right. Hey, bars and restaurants reopening February 1st, according to Governor Whitmer. Republicans, of course, saying, well, now that Biden's in office, of course, they're going to reopen the economy, suggesting that this is transparent. Although if you look at it, it appears that the case numbers are starting to plateau, which is what we hoped would happen while we closed the stuff down back in November. I'm not going to be rushing out anytime soon. Anybody else?
I am going to get carryouts, but I'm still not going to.
Well, you're vaccinated.
I'm one of two vaccinations.
But, yeah, but still.
But I'm still not going to be jumping in to a restaurant right away, I think. I think it's great. As you say, the numbers are going down. I mean, at some point we were reaching in Michigan like 8,000-9,000 new cases a day. I mean, now we're in the 2,000s, which is really extremely high considering that in the summer we were in the 200s.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So there's still too many. There's still too many. We had on Wednesday, I think there were 4,300 people who died nationally. It's still outrageous.
You know. My husband and I are doing about one carryout meal a week. I feel like that's maybe in the before times we might have eaten out like twice a week. And so, you know, I feel like we're supporting restaurants to the extent that we can. I'm getting tired of cooking. And ordering a pizza is not always the way to go. But I mean, I think this is a good step. Lynn and I just took Lynn had the bug, and so she has antibodies now, right? I probably shouldn't have revealed that.
I had the COVID.
Yeah. So she has antibodies, but I have not. Yeah. And we took a trip to Florida that was probably a little ill-advised, although we were very responsible about it. And restaurants are open there, but most people are still eating outdoors. Of course, in Florida, you can.
Yeah. It's a little difficult here in February.
Igloos. I don't know if I'm going to become one of the igloo people.
Around us, a lot of the restaurants are now finally kind of putting outdoor heated tents, you know, out there with ventilation and whatnot, you know, and which, you know, I think is a good thing. And hopefully, you know, long after this, now in Michigan, we will actually have outdoor eating options, you know, years after,
right,
which will be kind of nice. But again, yeah, like Nancy said, I mean, I had COVID and I have antibodies, but I probably still wouldn't eat indoors. Just why do it? But, you know, it seems like, I think it's a good thing, a good time to be doing it. If people, you know, when we were in Florida, by the way, people were actually very, were wearing masks on the street outdoors, you know, I mean, they were pretty vigilant about it, which was cool. So, you know, as long as people keep up good social distancing, if you're not high risk or you don't live with someone who's high risk, you know, and it's outside and there's ventilation and whatnot, you know, I guess it's kind of a personal choice, but
I
don't.
I think we'll slowly sort of start to emerge, you know, from our cocoons over the next few months as more and more of us get vaccinated. Yeah. I'm still way down on the list. I'm not going to be seeing it anytime soon unless things change dramatically. I think we'll get that Johnson & Johnson vaccine on board probably by the end of the month, which is pretty significant. That one is going to be a bit of a game changer in that it doesn't need to be refrigerated at negative 18 million degrees or whatever. And like, that's the kind of stuff that's going to be able to be given at, at your CVS's and things like that, which will be huge. Yeah. So that's going to be a big deal. And I think maybe by the summer, we might actually be able to hang out together again in person, which would be kind of nice.
I have to say the shot is so remarkable. You cannot feel it. It's like they put it in you. I mean, it's...
we're adults. We shouldn't worry about that anyway.
What did you expect? Like a burning sensation?
No. Feel the shot at least. You don't even feel it. And the thing is, once it starts being distributed, I think we're going to see a very aggressive... I mean, we finally have a president who's taking this as a priority. I mean, Trump was like, he was on the golf course after, you know, the...
He was obsessed with the election. And, you know, again, this is where the whole transition period was foobar, but because of this ridiculous, the lie, because of the big lie. So,
all right. Well,
Alan, if you want for the second shot, how about a spoon and a lighter? I mean, if you really want to feel.
I like that.
Okay. Or you could just go to the greenhouse in Wall Lake and just
take
your card over there, Alan. Absolutely. I'll give you a free pre-roll.
Well, I'm wondering if you can get two. For each shot.
I'm not sure how that works. It's entirely possible. All right. Okay. We got 5 minutes left. It's time for Schmuck of the Week nominations. And again, it's a little less satisfying this week, I'm guessing, since, you know, things are a little bit different. But, you know, pretty soon we're going to be criticizing the policies and the stances being taken by this current administration. And we might even see some schmucks that aren't related to Donald Trump in the coming months, which would be kind of nice. But for now, I think my schmuck is still related there. But who wants to go first this time around? Nancy wants to go first.
Ted Cruz. It's that beard has not made his face any less punchable. And for him to show up at the inauguration, I think, is the absolute peak of... children, cover your ears. Assholery that I have seen in the last...
Well, My favorite thing is he retweeted something that Donald Trump had tweeted earlier about, of course, the Paris Accords, and saying by signing this executive order, Joe Biden shows that he cares more about the people of Paris than he does the people of Pittsburgh, which, okay, it was signed in Paris. It doesn't have anything to do with the people of Paris. It has something to do with the people of the world. And the best part about that tweet that was so stupid in the first place is that the city of Pittsburgh came out and said, oh, no, we're still following what the Accords say to do. And we're still in as a city. We're still in. So don't lump us in with this kind of stuff. So, yes, Ted Cruz gets a nomination. I think that's a pretty good one.
Okay.
Who wants to go next? Let's go with Saeed.
I'll go. Okay.
Go ahead, Lynn.
Lynn goes then.
Lynn, okay, go ahead.
So my schmuck of the week is, his name is Nick Shawnee. Does that ring a bell? Nick Shawnee is the one responsible for us seeing Bernie Sanders in his mittens and overcoat in every possible photo ever. Nancy texted me a couple last night in a screenshot of a Mad Men scene. But Nick Shawnee is the guy who whatever he did, he made it possible to put the picture of Bernie Sanders into any shot that you can find on, I guess it's Google Street View.
Oh yeah,
so I put him in my yard.
I'm over it. You know, it's been 24 hours, and so that's my guy.
I thought a couple of those were pretty funny. One of my favorites was Saeed will know this one. The copy of The Replacements, Let It Be, where they're sitting on the roof. They injected Bernie on that into that picture, and I thought that one was pretty good.
I liked where he was in the bathtub with Prince, and it says "Dig if you will, the mittens."
I did like the mittens. The mittens look really, really comfortable.
Yeah.
Something to be said about that. Those Vermonters know how to keep warm. All right, Saeed, what you got?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to go ahead and if I can offer an anti-schmuck of the week, and that's Greta Thunberg, who waited and trolled both Cruz and Trump with everything that they ever said about her or against the environment. She really zinged them. So way to go, Greta. My schmuck of the week, we actually already mentioned him, and that is former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who had decried the idea of how America was too multicultural. And he was even, of course, for the 1776 revisionism initiative, which was struck down by President Biden in his stack of executive orders.
Education, come on now.
Yeah.
But he also tweeted on Inauguration Day, 1,384 days, marking the time for the next election, as if he has a prayer to go ahead and win. Which sub-schmuck of the week then has to be Jon Bon Jovi with an impeachable offense version of Here Comes the Sun.
Oh. I mean, that thing was timed so beautifully as the sun was rising over the Atlantic Ocean in Miami. I mean, you know, they had to set that up so far in advance. It wasn't that terrible. I mean, I've seen worse. But we can argue about that another day. You know what? I'm going to let Alan go last this time because I've got one that I think is something that bothers me, but it's not the worst thing in the world. Well, it actually is. But you have a guy who is the chairman of the Wyoming Republican Party. His name is Frank E. Thorne. And he suggested, one, he wants to get rid of Liz Cheney, of course, because, you know, she didn't support the president. But he has suggested that it is time for Wyoming to secede from the union. He says, we're keeping our eyes on Texas, too, and their consideration of possible secession. They have a different state constitution than we do as far as wording, but it's something we're all paying attention to. And to that, I say, Wyoming, as much as I would miss Yellowstone, as much as I would miss
the
Grand Tetons.
We keep Yellowstone.
That's federal. That's right. Yeah, it is. Federal. So are the Grand Tetons now, because that's a national park, too.
And, we
and the rest of Wyoming.
And you can have the rest of it. It's all cows, cowboys, and... You
there's
know.
There's like nothing there. No. Has anybody ever driven through Wyoming? I mean,
I have. It's probably the lower of the 48. The lower 48. It is the least populated.
It's the least populated. Period. Least
oh, it is even less than
it
Alaska?
Is number. It is number 50. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
It doesn't. It doesn't even deserve its one congressperson because it's I think 450,000. Population.
Yeah, DC's almost double the population without the same representation, which that may change. We'll see. Alan Langle gets the honor of going last.
My memory of Wyoming was driving through there in my 20s, and I was looking for a motel late at night, and the motel was locked up, and there was a soda machine, and there was some type of flyer for something for sale, and it said something like, even the Jews would like this deal. Something like that. And I thought, okay, maybe I'll keep driving.
Well, 600 miles to the next gas station. I mean, it's a whole lot of nothing out there. Not all right, your turn.
My person is Michael Foy, the fella from Wixom, who was caught on video.
Mr. Hockey.
With a hockey stick beating on police officers. And the FBI affidavit said that the tip came in from somebody who said he is the one who was responsible for the officer being killed. But the affidavit did say we have not yet verified that. But they do have video of him beating on cops with the hockey stick. So there's our Michigan representation in Washington. Yeah. So.
All right.
So thought it couldn't get worse after the kidnappers.
Right.
We ran out of time to talk about this today, but I can't let it go without mentioning the fact that the Detroit Lions hired a new head coach yesterday who apparently is all into eating kneecaps. If anybody watched the press conference yesterday with the new head coach of the Detroit Lions, if you haven't seen it, go back and watch it. It is really quite something to see. And it'll be funny to watch this guy.
Does that mean that Army Hammer is going to be the new general manager?
All right, we got to get going here. But I would like to thank everyone for being with us today. Lynn Walsh, thank you so much. We always appreciate your input. It's great to have you on again. Saeed Khan, thank you, sir. And again, we'll argue about music another day. I promise you that. Thanks as well to Nancy Derringer and Alan Langle of Deadline Detroit. We appreciate you both being here. I want to thank the Greenhouse of Walled Lake for their support of this program and their support of Deadline Detroit, deadlinedetroit.com. Don't forget to go there for all your daily news needs. I've got a couple of interviews up right now with people who are running for city council in Detroit's 4th District. That's going to start shaping up in the next few weeks. Obviously, we've got a little while before the filing deadline, but there are going to be some crowded and fun races to watch in the city of Detroit this election year over there. So
it's going to be a good one, the 4th District.
Oh yeah, that one's going to be really interesting, as will the at-large ones. I have a feeling there's going to be some jockeying for position over there. Thanks to Michael Lucido for engineering this broadcast today. And of course, thanks to all of you for watching today. Again, deadlinedetroit.com/membership, just $3 a month. Keep this little ragtag bunch of dogged reporters at our desks doing what we love to do. And thanks, everybody. And Alan,
stay home safely.
Looking for the latest news and information about our great city of Detroit? Head to deadlinedetroit.com for one-stop shopping for the most important stories of the day. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in town, providing original reporting, videos, and podcasts that keep you in the know about everything happening in Detroit. Become a member today, and you'll automatically be entered into a drawing for prizes, including gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Go to deadlinedetroit.com/membership.